John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Tell you what, we start the week off and it is busy. I mean, you know, it's funny because, again, we don't have too many. We do have Major League Soccer. That's now starting. We got hockey now beginning to prep. Baseball, inter-squad games. Still waiting on a big day in the National Football League, because the players are on a conference call with the owners to try to see if they can get the last protocols figured out for training camp, regular season, and all those different things. And then we have so much big news going on, so we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get into the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
It contains testimony from the four alleged victims that they were paid off a total of $55,000 in order to sign an affidavit that, if you, as you guys know, recanting their testimony from 2 days prior. And, you know, so it was one guy got paid 30 grand or said he did. Another guy said he got paid 20 grand and then two guys split 5 grand.
Sorry, that's Pat Leonard reporting on the Quentin Dunbar, DeAndre Baker story that just gets weirder and weirder and starting to look like, I don't know if Dunbar is going to be with the team. I would have to think that Baker may not be with the New York Giants, but the story now over the weekend is that Michael Grieco, actually that's happened today, he's now resigned as the attorney for Quentin Dunbar. Because allegedly he and his partner were in the office. They had players over there, and now they have evidence and five witness statements that said, okay, there was no victim in this crime. Nothing happened. But now surveillance video shows those witnesses going into Grieco's office with bags of cash. And if that's going to be the case, you know, where'd the money come from? There's some evidence of Baker at least either calling or tweeting or texting his lawyer that he was nearby, and it's like, where do I go for the money? And if this is going to be the case, I'd have to think that with the new attorneys, this is going to be a hard one for Dunbar and Baker. And it depends on what the police are going to do. The new attorneys for Dunbar came in and asked for, you know, at least the request to get all the evidences there. And apparently there is a lot of evidence. And so this thing is an absolute mess. What you wonder about, and I don't know, Curtis Smart, Rogers, if this is indeed true that they paid off $55,000 to change the testimony, there's going to be two cornerbacks not in this league.
Yeah, I don't see any feasible way for either Quentin Dunbar or DeAndre Baker to remain employed by their current teams. And, you know, obviously Dunbar is the one that we are going to be focusing on more here because he's a member of the Seattle Seahawks. And yet he's never played a down for the Seahawks, and who knows if he ever does play a down for the Seahawks.
And who knows if he even plays in this league again, because, first off, we'll have to see, you know, what kind of charges that can come up against him. He's already got the four robbery charges, and that's still there. You know, Baker has eight, and I know the Giants aren't going to tolerate any of this. You know, a lot of rumblings that they're going to let the former first-round pick go from last year if this is going to be the case. We're going to talk to Bob Condotta at 10:30 to see what he thinks and what's – but again, tell you what, 48 years of covering the NFL, this is one of the weirder ones I've been seeing.
Number two.
This just became official, and I have a release here that came out 2 minutes ago. On July 3rd, we announced the commencement of a thorough review of the team's name. That review has begun in earnest. As part of this process, we want to keep our sponsors, fans, and community apprised of our thinking as we go forward. Today, we are announcing we will be retiring the Redskins' name and logo upon completion of this review. Dan Snyder and Coach Rivera are working closely to develop a new name and design approach that will enhance the standing of our proud, tradition-rich franchise and inspire our sponsors, fans, and community for the next 100 years.
That's Mike Greenberg reading a statement from the Washington football team, which has resigned the words Redskins, and now they have to go through the process of getting a new name. And as quickly as this moved, we'll have to see how quick they can get the name. And most people think the new name is going to be there before training camp. And there are some complications because apparently I saw that one guy who I guess is always like to get involved with trademark type of things, you know, has taken away some of the options for Dan Snyder. I know that Dan Snyder let the words Warriors, because he had a patent on Warriors, let that lapse. Now the question is Warriors too close to Redskins? Even though, again, it's not a negative thing. And, you know, you can go back into, you know, the early thousands as far as the years where Warriors were something that is there. So does he do Warriors, Red Tails? But apparently this one person actually has the Red Tail trademark, although he does say that he will give it away free because he's a Redskin fan. But now something has to change. The two people making the decision is going to be Dan Snyder and Ron Rivera, the head coach. Rivera, of course, advising Dan Snyder because it's obviously his team and his nickname and what he's going to do. Last week, retail stores, both Target, Walmart, announced they were not going to carry the team's merchandise. And now that's not going to be the case now because there's no merchandise to go with the Redskins. And it's kind of ironic that the release came out on a Redskin release. Very strange, but that's the way it is. Fast-moving story in Washington.
Number three.
These conferences typically follow each other. I think the Big Ten's announcement caught a lot of people by surprise just how quickly it happened. But I think a lot of schools or a lot of leagues were talking about the possibility of going conference only. You know, their doctors have been talking to each other for months. They have familiarity with testing on each of the campuses and what's going on, not just on campus, but around the campuses. If you have hot spots for both of the LA schools, just in the area, same with the Arizona schools. So I think they look at this and say, if we're going to play, and it's still an if, not a definite, this will be a football season, we feel most comfortable going forward with just our league because we've been in communication the entire way through.
Well, two of the Big Five schools have made decisions as far as the conferences. You know, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are going to have conference-only schedules in 2020, and that's if there's going to be a 2020. Under the new format, the regular season, no more is going to be 11 games with every team playing each other. No more than 11 games with 11 teams playing each other. So we'll see how many games they're going to be able to squeeze in, and if they're going to be able to squeeze in. There's more and more thought that you're not going to have a college football season this year. It may go to spring next year. This morning, the Patriot League, with Lehigh and several schools like that, announced that they're not going to have any fall sports, just like the Ivy League. Now, will everybody else follow? And, of course, there's a lot of pessimism out there about sports in college this fall. Then you have Commissioner Larry Scott. He's got COVID. He's now quarantining at his home. Earlier today, the ACC announced they were postponing the virtual football media day, and no surprise there. We're going to talk at 11 o'clock with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com to see about the Pac-12 and college football.
Number four.
This is cranked out to right field, opposite away, and this is gone. It's a multi-homer game, exhibition inter-squad style for Kyle Lewis as he is homered to left. He has now homered to right field, and he makes it 3-0 Pilots. My goodness.
So the inter-squad games, three are in the books right now. Kyle Lewis has hit three home runs, a pair on Friday, and he's doing a lot of good stuff this weekend. One note of injury. Gerson Bautista has strained a flexor muscle. He was getting the ball up at about 101 miles an hour. It's not going to require surgery, but he's going to be out for some time. The timetable is unknown. Taijuan Walker is going to make his return to the Mariners today and a start in today's inter-squad game. And you can watch the action today on YouTube, on Mariners' YouTube page. It's at 2:45 today. So the Mariners in action, and Kyle Lewis absolutely hot, and he's really heating things up as we need to get things heated up in this town.
Number five.
Most teams are expected to report to training camp July 28th. There's an increasingly pessimistic tone that I've heard around the league about whether or not that will actually happen. There are a lot of challenges ahead for the NFL and the NFL Players Association to make that reporting date happen. We all want to see it happen. But again, there's testing to figure out, there's protocols to figure out, and of course there are the financial ramifications to figure out. There's a lot of work to be done between now and then to make the start of training camp later this month a reality that right now looks like it's going to be increasingly challenging to get done.
Well, today's going to be a big day to figure it all out because both sides are going to have a conference call to see what they're going to do as far as a lot of those different things that have to be resolved. And, you know, if they don't get most of these things resolved today and in the next couple days, then what you're looking at, and again, a lot of this is just bargaining and positioning and everything else. It's like, you know, they may delay camp 2 weeks, may start around August the 10th, but the idea is you want to have 47 days before the start of camp. That's what the joint committee said, that before the start of the regular season. So, and of course, the players want to ramp it up in a slower basis to not risk injuries. They don't want any preseason games. You know, the owners would like to be able to put 35% of the player salary in escrow, and that's not going to go over very big, and so that's going to be turned down, and we'll see about the preseason games. Again, the idea is, a 25th through the 29th is a time that everybody's supposed to report, but if things don't get resolved this week, it will be later, and they may start in the second week of August, but don't count out anything yet. We'll see how the negotiations go today. Hey, listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we're going to go under further review and talk about which players are going to help the Seahawks defense improve in 2020. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
So, of course, we go into further review here as we start to look ahead to hopefully the start of training camp. And obviously, the big story for the Seahawks is going to be defense. And, of course, a little bit of a disappointment now in the Quentin Dunbar situation because now his status very much in question. And had they gotten Dunbar, and, of course, Dunbar now his attorney, getting out of the case because, now the charge now it will probably be that they paid off $55,000 to get this thing resolved to the people with the that are claiming to be victims. And so we won't make too many judgments on that because that one's more complicated than ever. But I guess the more complicated thing for that as far as on the field is, what players are going to be able to help this Seahawks defense improve in 2020. So Brock Huert was on with Danny and Gallant this morning discussing it.
Seattle's 2019 defense was the worst in Pete Carroll's 10 years in Seattle. Who are the two or three defensive players capable of changing that in 2020?
Well, number one has to be Jaren Reed. I always look at guys that get paid a substantial amount of money of having more responsibility. The same reason that we look at Russell and we look at Bobby and those guys making $35 million and $18 million, they have got to be at the top of their game. They have got to maximize that commitment you've made for with them and pay off that responsibility. And you went into the free agent market and your most important asset based on what you paid them and the timing of it was Jaren Reed. And you need Jaren Reed to get back to being who Jaren Reed was in 2018 and not the guy that we saw in 2019 who missed the first six games of the year, who missed all of that time, who was playing catch-up. In no way was there even a game last year, a half last year, where I was like, oh, man, that was nice to see Jaren take it over. Like he did at times in 2018 where he had double-digit sacks. So you're paying him $10-plus million a year. There's immense responsibility. He is a strong voice and leader. I think that, too, was muted in a way a season ago as he missed the first 6 weeks and kind of had to come in with the chin down a little bit and feeling some of that responsibility. So he's got to be number one. I would then put LJ Collier as a former first-round pick who really got a pass in year number one also with some injury and missing time and everything else. But you invested a first-round pick into that guy. And he's got to be the versatile weapon that this defensive line needs. That it functioned best when Michael Bennett could play all over that defensive line. And they're going to need LJ to bring his talent and his skill set to the forefront where he was a zero last year in production. He's got to at least be a four or five. And then, the guy that we've talked about a bunch this offseason, Marquise Blair. Dude is violent. I mean, absolutely stings you in a way that others on that defense cannot. And those would be three that who if, there is a significant step in contribution, would really, really aid this defense.
Yeah, and of course, the two things have to improve is a defensive end. Now, again, Jadeveon Clowney's status still remains uncertain because, he's not really taking any offers and he's not doing much as far as that goes. And who knows, it's still doubtful that he comes back, but hey, we'll see where it goes. But, I would actually put LJ Collier in the main role there. Now, he's right about Jaren Reed, but, we know what to expect out of Jaren Reed, although we didn't see it last year. We saw it 2 years ago, but I'm not saying he has to have a 10.5 sack season, but if he can come back with about six or seven sacks, help stop the run, do a good job there, then that's really going to aid things. But they need the starters at defensive end because, they've lost two starters at defensive end in Jadeveon Clowney. They've lost, certainly Quentin Jefferson, who ended up being a starter, even though It was supposed to be Ziggy Ansah, but Ziggy just didn't have it last year. Shorter really held him back, and you see he hasn't even got a job yet. But I have to think, and ironically, I know I was on Sirius Radio on Friday, and we talked to L.J. Collier. And you can see, I mean, and I know in the Zoom conference calls here in Seattle with the Seattle media, I mean, he had that chip on the shoulder, and that chip is even more pronounced from what he was talking about on Friday. And so I think that they need him to step up to be that five-technique guy along with Rasheem Green. And you know, you figure that you know, it's a different thing on the defensive end because that's going to be a shared position. You know, we don't know if Bruce Irvin is going to start at strong side. I know he's most likely going to share the position with K.J. Wright. And then on passing downs, come into some kind of a rotation, you know, with Benson Mayoa and also with Daryl Taylor. And we'll see if Alton Robinson gets on there. But I think the big upgrade from last year was the sense that, you now have, certainly more Leos than you had last year because you really didn't have a Leo. I mean, you basically had a lot of five techniques, and that was one of the reasons for only 28 sacks. I mean, you put Clowney over in one side, and he's going to get double teamed because there wasn't enough pass rushing threats to a point where the highest pass rusher was Rasheem Green, the five technique, backup five technique, at getting four sacks. So I go Collier one, Reed two, and then clearly now, as we've seen this weekend and this past week develop, you know, Trey Flowers has to be the one that has to step up because, you know, he did not have enough man defense. I think he's more comfortable in man. You know, they played so much zone because of the lack of the pass rush and the lack of pressure on the quarterback, but I think he's more comfortable in man. And now that they've taken away the review of all the pass interference calls, I think they'll be a little bit easier in not calling as many pass interference calls, and that'll give him a chance, I think, to go more like his first season and have a chance to bounce back. So those are the three on defense that really do need to step up. We don't know about Jordan Brooks yet, but we know that he could be a great addition because of his speed, and certainly, Irvin could be such a great addition because if he can get anywhere, you know, he's had 52 sacks in his career, if he can get anywhere between 10 or 12 sacks, then you're going to be golden. I don't know, Curtis, what three do you like?
I think L.J. Collier is chief among the players that need to step up this season in order for Seattle's defense to make any sort of leap compared to where they were last year. Collier, in May, in a Zoom conference call with the Seattle media, talked about how he didn't have the year he wanted, but he thinks it's disrespectful that people have written him off.
I am chomping at the bit to get out there because you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you didn't have the year everybody wanted you to get, so they just kind of shift you off to the side as if you can't play. It's disrespectful, and I feel very disrespected, but I'm the type of person, there's no need for talking, just showing, go out there, you know, you run through a couple of people, you run through people's faces, you make noise, and people, they'll remember who you are very quickly. And, like, I'm excited to get back out there and show people who I am. You know, I don't really care about the first-round pick stuff. I'm a football player at the end of the day. I can play football at a high level just like everybody else can. I'm out there to prove that I'm one of the best, and I can do what I need to do. I can rush the pass. I can stop the run. I'm out there to prove that I'm one hell of a football player, and I'm going to show that this year.
And, I mean, to get any sort of contribution from him is going to be huge for Seattle, especially if they don't get Jadeveon Clowney back on the defensive line. Daryl Taylor also on that defensive line. A couple of guys that I think Seattle could use really any sort of production from because they didn't get anything from Collier last year, and who knows what Daryl Taylor can bring. Also on the defense, I'm right there with you, John. Somebody in that secondary needs to step up, especially if Quentin Dunbar doesn't play for the Seahawks. And just as the days continue, as we find out more and more about this case, at one point it looked like it was heading in Dunbar's favor, but now things have drastically taken a turn over the last a week or so to where I don't know if Dunbar's ever going to suit up for the Seahawks. So if that's going to be the case, Seattle's going to need somebody in that secondary to step up. You mentioned Trey Flowers. I think that's a really good candidate. You know, somebody who did set a career high in interceptions, but there were a lot of times where it looked like he was kind of flailing around out there out of position. So hopefully he can kind of take a step that we saw Shaquille Griffin take in year number three. The way we saw Trey Flowers sort of take a step back in year two, similar to what Griffin did in year two, where in year three it was a whole different ballgame. Shaquille Griffin was a Pro Bowl cornerback, and hopefully Trey Flowers I'm not expecting a Pro Bowl season from him at all, but anything above his productivity in 2019 is going to be a godsend to the Seattle defense.
Oh, I agree. And that's why I think that these guys are talented enough that they can step up and do that. And, you know, in the case of Collier, you're talking about a first round pick. And of course, don't go overboard on the fact he was taken in the first round, because if you draft anybody from 21 to 32, you're basically getting a second round pick that you're getting in the first round. It's just kind of a placement, because what happens, you get 18 to 20 first round grades by most teams on first rounders. And that's why John Snyder goes trades down and moves around to try to get extra value for it. But in this case, you know, they had the two first round picks because they got the one for Frank Clark, and they were able to move things with that. And then, you know, now come back and you get Collier, and now Collier does have to step up and play at least like a second round pick. I mean, let's put it this way. If he can play to the level of Jaron Reed in his second year, this team's going to be golden. Hey, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle, because remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Dunbar situation with Bob Condotta, the Seattle Times. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, Bob Condotta was hoping to rest a little bit, but Quentin Dunbar and others kind of messed all that up. And joining us here is Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times. And again, I keep on reiterating, you know, 48 years of coverage, and the Quentin Dunbar, DeAndre Baker story remains one of the strangest ones I think I've ever witnessed. And so now with Dunbar's attorney, you know, stepping down from the case, the accusations out there that they paid off $55,000 to get the players to, or the people to recant. I mean, what would you say is Dunbar's chances of staying with this team?
Well, I don't completely rule him out. I think the Seahawks might, you know, sort of take the wait and see and let the process play out kind of stance on this. He does face lesser charges than DeAndre Baker does. So, you know, maybe they would see what the New York Giants would do first and then kind of go that route a little bit and let that indicate their actions. I know the NFL is continuing to look into it and hasn't really made a determination one way or the other yet either. So, I think Dunbar's attorney sort of hinted at something on Friday that I think is part of what the Seahawks would take into consideration. It is the whole, extortion, and was this whole thing sort of a setup kind of thing. And, so NFL teams, I think are usually willing to sort of try to let the process play out in some of this stuff. And I think for now, that's what they're going to do with Dunbar.
Mm-hmm. Well, which makes sense. I mean, again, it's like you can't. I mean, again, this one's so strange. It's like, how do you read it? I mean, when you heard of this, because I know that when they had the original when he pleaded not guilty, the prosecutor hinted that, you know, this could they have done this? Could they try to pay him off? And now, if indeed there's evidence that, where'd the money come from? How did that all happen? But again, was this a setup to try to do something? I mean, you would think if you're going to do something like that, you're going to have the FBI involved to kind of watch.
Yeah, and the question there would, I guess, from the Seahawks specifics, perspective would be how much Dunbar was involved in any of that. And it was difficult to know from reading the New York Daily News story the other day and what the reports on all of this, how involved Dunbar himself would have been in any of the payoff stuff. So then does it just become, especially for the Seahawks, and you're looking specifically at Dunbar, what is this, you know, goes back to sort of the original case, and then what is the situation there? So the fact that his lawyers, he no longer has the lawyers who were alleged to be involved, or the one lawyer anyway, Michael Greco, who was alleged to be involved in the cover up. Maybe that mitigates that a little bit when it comes to just Dunbar himself specifically. And, you know, maybe there's, you know, he wasn't involved in that part of it. A lot of these are legal questions that it's hard to sort of answer from the outside. You know, as you know, there's a lot of confusion maybe over a lot of this and exactly what they may be looking at. And I think, again, that's why the Seahawks might just sort of let the process play out here a little bit. There's so much uncertainty over everything anyway, right? And how with NFL seasons and all of that. So that might be the more likely route they go here. But yeah, I think it's going to be, it'll, you know, on the cover up specifically, I think trying to figure out exactly if Dunbar was involved in that at all, will be another key part of what the NFL and the Seahawks might do with him.
Yeah, and of course, I would imagine the other thing is now just trying to, you know, figure out what the NFL would do. I mean, because, you know, with the accusation of a charge like this, of maybe trying to cover it up, you know, would they put him on the exempt list along with Baker?
Exactly, and I do know from, you know, just hearing from the NFL this morning, and they just are continuing to review it, so there's nothing specific there on that. So at the moment, it would be speculation about whether they would do something like that, but certainly they could. You know, we've seen the NFL last year, the Seahawks saw it firsthand that Jaron Reed was suspended 6 games, even when there weren't charges filed in his case. And in this case, obviously, there have been charges filed, although nothing has gone to trial yet. So it remains unsettled from a legal standpoint, but the NFL does have the purview to do that. They can put people on the commissioner's exempt list. So there are some other things that could happen here for sure. None of that is settled yet.
How would you describe the impact if he's not going to be on this team?
Well, it would obviously be, you know, I think you just go back to Trey Flowers being the likely guy to start at the other quarterback spot there. And, you know, changes some of their plans a little bit for sure. I think something they had really factored into how they addressed their offseason was that I think they felt like their secondary was going to be a lot better by adding Dunbar to it, having more options with the nickel packages and what you might do with those. And, you know, that maybe Trey Flowers becomes part of the nickel package and you ship Dunbar inside to play in the slot. You could do some things like that. And that would help clear up the pass rush quite a bit. And Pete Carroll alluded to that, you know, one of his postseason times when he met with the media about, you know, that pass rush, you can't just say it's solely on the line. You know, sometimes you got to have the covers be better too. And I think that played into it. I think when they got Dunbar in March, you know, some of the decisions they made in terms of what they did with the defensive line and all of that were based on the idea that we're going to be a lot better in the secondary this year, just with the, you know, added year of experience for a lot of guys and then adding Dunbar to that. So it definitely, you know, changes the plan quite a bit there if he is not available to them.
Speaking of the secondary, how do you chime in on the Jamal Adams interest that Seattle has in him, if indeed the Jets would be willing to trade him?
Well, I think the last part is the biggest part. I mean, do the Jets really, you know, do they have to trade him? And this is one of those things that could probably draw out a little bit unless they just get an offer that completely floors them, you know, sort of like the Clowney thing last year with Houston, where, you know, you wait to see how serious the player is going to be about holding out and all that kind of stuff. And if it becomes an untenable situation and then you really do have to trade him, you know, so it feels like we've got two or three of these around the NFL with varying guys that maybe this is going to happen with. But I do think Seattle's interested. Probably if they can't have Quentin Dunbar, you know, maybe that changes their interest a little bit too, you know, as a way to feel like you're improving your secondary. And you know, if you don't have Dunbar there, it becomes more of an urgency to want to try to do that. You know, Jamal Adams obviously is a player that I think if you traded for, you would really want to try to keep for the long term as well. And, you know, that could be altered a little bit by Dunbar's situation too, because, you know, right now you got two quarterbacks in Dunbar and Griffin that are entering the last year of their contracts and you're probably not keeping both of them. If you added Jamal Adams to that mix, you know, that's another guy you're going to have to figure out something to do with contractually, fairly quickly. So, you know, a lot at stake, but I do know that Seattle definitely is interested in Jamal Adams and getting involved in that when it really becomes a serious thing they could do.
Clearly, I guess if they make that trade, you would have to think Marquise Blair would be part of it, because, you know, if the Jets trade Adams, then there's basically nothing there for them at safety, because Marcus May, who is a safety drafted the same year as Jamal Adams and is a starter, they're trying to trade him.
Yeah, and that would make complete sense, obviously, to use Blair as a bargaining chip, because he is a young safety, 3 years left on his rookie deal, a guy with a lot of promise. And if you're the Jets, exactly, that's sort of what you'd want back, right? Is somebody who maybe could not be to the level of Jamal Adams, certainly immediately anyway, but would save you a lot of money in the process, and maybe you could solve the issue a little bit by getting a veteran safety somewhere in the process too. And then if you're the Seahawks, you know, you just if you acquire Jamal Adams, you are sort of consigning Marquise Blair to just, you know, really kind of having a hard road to go to get any playing time at safety anytime soon. So it makes sense to do that from that standpoint.
Well, that's the thing I find so unusual in the Adams' interest. And again, if you're getting a great player, you get a great player. But the thing that kind of amazes me, like, it's hard enough right now for Adams to get on the field because, you know, the combination of having Quandre Diggs and Bradley McDougal is a pretty good pairing. But and clearly, if you do something with Adams, that you trade Blair and then you probably let McDougal go.
Yeah, and exactly, and it does sort of change it up that way. I think if you're the Seahawks, though, you're just looking at, you know, is this an elite kind of player that makes it worth trying to do that? And I think that's the assessment that, I'm sure they're making, and my understanding is they definitely are interested in, you know, they're always interested in everything. It sounds like they are definitely interested in this one, and, we'll see exactly, I guess, when push comes to shove, exactly how interested they are by how much they might be willing to give up. I mean, you know, we've seen the Seahawks when they make these trades, especially with the Clowney trade, you know, they were able to really wait it out and get Clowney for a lot less than anybody thought was going to be possible. And, you know, what's always the wild card in these things is you can be interested, but then another team just offers more than you're willing to do. And you know, the Jets obviously aren't going to care much about, Adams did give that list of where he wants to go, but if you're the Jets, you might not care that much about what Adams's list says and go ahead and trade him to whoever might want to, who might be interested. So, a lot still to play there, but you're right. The Seahawks seem to have a pretty good setup at safety, and especially with the addition of Dunbar, you could make a case that the secondary was going to be a lot better this year by having Quandre Diggs from day one to pair with McDougal, you know, not having McDougal sort of going back and forth. So you have two safeties, two veteran safeties, really secure in their positions and at spots where they're really good. And by adding Dunbar, you now had two pretty veteran cornerbacks with Dunbar and Griffin that you would feel really confident in. It's just sort of figuring out the nickel package to really solidify it. So, conversely, this is such a weird year. We haven't, that nobody's been on the field. So I guess if there's a year when you could be like changing things up at the last minute, if there's a year to do that, maybe this is a year from that standpoint, you feel like that wouldn't disrupt things as much.
And then finally, what do you think, I know there's no latest on Jadeveon Clowney. My guess is after the Cleveland disaster for him, that they took Olivier Vernon back at 1 year's $11 million, that Clowney's value is $10 million or less. And if that is the case, does he wait till the end of camp to try to take a discounted deal?
I think probably, yeah. I mean, I think he's been more patient than he wanted to be, but he has been patient in the process so far. And I don't think he's going to rush into anything now, because I think you do wait and see, if maybe an injury or some other thing that happens in training camp changes things up and for him presents an opportunity that maybe wasn't there earlier. Last year we saw him really sort of do that with Miami. He could have accepted things with Miami earlier a year ago and ended up basically forcing his way to Seattle because that was his preferred destination. Maybe this will become a situation where at some point he'll have a destination that he prefers more. Last week we heard that Oakland had made a run at him. It didn't sound like that was a really competitive offer by the Raiders, and which is interesting because there's always an idea that maybe there's some wild card team out there that could suddenly be interested, and the Raiders made you think that maybe there was that, but it also just sort of sounds like the Raiders were just taking a flyer to see if maybe he's desperate enough to just kind of take a below market deal, and he was not yet. So I think that continues to show that Clowney is willing to sort of wait this out. Obviously, at some point he's going to have to sign something with somebody, but I still don't know that that's happening anytime soon.
Okay. Bob Condotta, we've been reading you at the Seattle Times. Hope you got a few days off, but I don't think you're going to have too many now in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, things keep happening for sure. So, and yeah, Quentin Dunbar is, it's been about two additional weeks of work this offseason, probably, following that case.
Well, I think we all have. Hey, Bob, thank you for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Hey, be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. Professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we're going to go behind the lines, check out what's going on in the National Football League. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, it took 11 days of review for Dan Snyder to take his Washington football team and retire the Redskin name to it. Now the process is going to be, you know, where does it go next? He and Ron Rivera are going to be deciding on this. Ron, of course, kind of giving him advice and say, okay, do this, do this, do this. And, of course, Dan making the ultimate decision. But Dan had no choice because he had so much against him. You know, they were not going to allow the Redskin name to carry to a new stadium if they would ever allow it in D.C. to be built. You've got Pepsi, you've got Nike, they were pulling ads. Target and Walmart, they're pulling Redskin gear out. And then you have three minority owners, including Fred Smith from FedEx, all three of those guys wanting out. And then at the end of the year, FedEx was going to stop the sponsorship of the stadium, the endorsement on FedEx Field. And so something had to happen, and now it's happened. And so which name do they go? Do they go with the Warriors? Do they go with the Red Tails? Do they go with the Presidents? Curtis, which way do you think they go?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they pick here, John. I think my preferred option would be Red Tails, just because we've heard in the statements that Ron Rivera's made over the last couple of weeks that they're looking for a team name that not only, you know, fits the organization but also kind of salutes the military. You know, the Tuskegee Airmen, they were known as the Red Tails, which I think would be a nice honor to have that for the franchise. And you also, you know, with red still being a part of the team nickname, you won't have to revamp really the colors or anything of the organization either. I think that would be an easy transition. Warriors, you know, there's the Golden State Warriors who own that really nickname. That's what you think of when you think of Warriors, the nickname in sports right now. I don't know if that would be a good move for Washington to go after that. You know, I think they're, you know, find something unique. There's opportunities here for them to get creative and to kind of right a lot of wrongs that they've done over the last 100 years or so. And I think Red Tails would be a nice way to honor some people that are definitely deserving of recognition. John, mm-hmm. How soon do you think a nickname will get put in place here? We've heard a couple of people say, you know, within about 48 hours. We've also heard a couple of people say, you know, in the next couple of weeks. When do you expect this to happen?
I would have to think they got to get it done in the next week, because, you know, you've got to get the uniform changes and all the logo changes and all those different things. And so I'd have to think within a week. And I mean, hey, he took 11 days to decide the obvious, which was you got to lose the Redskin name. And so now it's a matter, because I think there's, you know, some negotiations going to have to go on, because, you know, some guy has the Red Tails and a couple of the other nicknames that might be under consideration. So that might have to be some negotiation with him. But apparently he's a Redskin fan, so he'd admonish it. And we'll see if there's any complication on Warriors, just from the standpoint that that's something that Dan Snyder had the rights to as a trademark, but he let it elapse at the beginning of the year. So there may be an issue like that. But, you know, the question, they got to get something done fast.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And you know, it's just going to be something that needs to change, and it's going to change, and there's you know, nothing that's going to stop this anymore. John, also in the NFL over the weekend, had a couple of interesting headlines. One involving the New England Patriots freeing up about $7 million in cap space,
yeah,
with grievances filed against Antonio Brown and then also the late Aaron Hernandez. That money now going towards the 2020 salary cap. So, John, that $7 million that the Patriots got here over the weekend, do you think they're going to be in on any sort of free agents that are left out there, or is that just going to be money going towards guys who are already on the roster?
No, I think that you know, they'll look for some things. You know, it's see if there's something that interests them, because now they've got all their draft choices signed. You know, they have that. Of course, I mean, if they do something, they're going to have to clear a little bit more money, because again, you have to figure out for injuries, practice squad, all those different things that you know, you can't just stay at $7 million, and so you're going to have to revamp some contracts. They took Burkhead and took his salary down. He was on a 2-year deal, and so they took it down to a 1-year deal at $2 million. And so they'll do some adjustments, but at least now, and what you wonder about the deviousness of this. And, you know, I say devious in the sense that, okay, here's the Patriots, and they were less than $1 million under the cap, and they're negotiating and talking to Cam Newton, and he was willing to do something, you know, for basically 1.75 that was, you know, less than 1.2 under the cap, knowing that they have cap issues, but they had to know that they were going to be getting these grievances back. And so all of a sudden, Newton signs, and now they have more cap room. Isn't that interesting?
Weird how that works out.
I know.
John, we're now, 48 hours away from the franchise tag deadline for players to reach agreements on either an extension or they will be forced to play on the tag in 2020. Still a handful of guys out there, Justin Simmons, Shaquille Barrett, Chris Jones, A.J. Green, Yannick Ngakoue. Any movement with any of those guys towards an extension? Also, Dak Prescott in that group, too.
I still think Prescott gets something done, although I know Calvin Watkins down in Dallas reporting that they're not close. But again, you know, the deadline's Wednesday, and it's upon Jerry Jones to make a move and get him done, because if not, to keep him, he's going to either cost $37.7 under the next year's cap when they're already tight, or it's going to cost him $39 if you put the exclusive tag on him. So they do need to get something done, and we'll see. I know they started negotiations with Chris Jones in Kansas City. Still think that's going to be tight, because even though Patrick Mahomes helped out by not raising his cap number the next 2 years, it does give him a chance. But can you take a defensive tackle when you have a $45 million quarterback, a $20.8 million defensive end in Frank Clark, and then have a $20 million defensive tackle? That might be tough, but hey, they're going to try. I think there's going to be very few deals done. I think Prescott has a chance. I think Simmons has a chance. There's an outside chance on Chris Jones, and just about everybody else is admitting it's not going to happen. Leonard Williams said he's not going to get a long-term deal. I know that Hunter Henry says he's not going to get a long-term deal. I think Derrick Henry's going to have a hard time. You know, Yannick Ngakoue, he's not going to do any kind of deal at all because he wants out. So I think at the most, there's only going to be two deals.
What time of day is that on Tuesday when that
My guess is, I could be wrong, but I think it's waiver wire time at 1 o'clock.
Okay, so 1 o'clock on Tuesday, or 1 o'clock on Wednesday. Keep your eye peeled for that. Also, John, a name that has been around the NFL for about the last decade but hasn't been heard from in quite some time, Terrell Pryor, attempting a comeback. He had that really good season with Cleveland back in, 2016? Mm-hmm. Then he signed with Washington, then with the Jets, and just kind of fell off the face of the earth. He's had some off-the-field issues, was involved in a domestic violence incident with a woman who stabbed him back in November. Just a wild, wild ride it's been for him over the last 4 or 5 years. But he's attempting a comeback in the NFL. He's somebody that I think has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way in the NFL during his career. I can't think of anybody that's got much great things to say about him. But do you think he makes it back in the NFL?
It may be tough. Now, what has to happen first is we've got to find out with how today's meeting goes with the Players Association and the owners, because there's an outside chance that the players want to have rosters reduced to 80, which, of course, is unusual because, boy, how many unions want to have 10 jobs knocked off your tryout type rosters? But, just to do something, they want that so it'd be a little bit safer. But, I'd say right now probably no, but what's going to end up happening is that you're going to have guys go in and they're going to fail their physical, and that'll create some openings. So I'd say looking at today's market, no, but once we get to the start of training camp, if it does start between the 25th and 29th, then we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see just how this free agent market develops once camp starts. And we don't even know if there's a guarantee that camp's going to start on the 28th. No. They say it will, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll get a better idea today, I hope, with the negotiation with that conference call. Hey, coming up next, we don't know about the college football season. All we do know is the Pac-12 decided they're going to have conference games only. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com will talk about it next. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.